Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 415 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, my best friend. He is, of course, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, my man. How are you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. You know that's the truth. We're going to start here with the review part, as ever. We're going to start here, though, at the G-Tech Arena in Magdeburg, Sachsen-Anhalt, Germany. Over here, Tyrone Zeuger, former world champion, now 27-1 with a draw, a unanimous decision over 8 rounds at light heavyweight against Nasser Boukenya, who's now 6-4. Like I say, unanimous decision over 8 rounds, not really entirely sure what the point of that fight was. The main event, if I'm not mistaken, was Tom Schwartz, now 28-1. Of course, that one loss inflicted by Tyson Fury, when Tyson Fury came to the ring as Apollo Creed and looked brilliant in those 2 rounds or whatever it was against Tom Schwartz before he knocked him out. Tom Schwartz got in there with heavyweight tough man Konstantin Dovbyshenko, who's now 10-14 with a draw, still never been stopped. He's such a tough guy. The scorecards in the end, I think 97-93 twice, but it was a really close fight, this fight here with Dovbyshenko. I think, you know, both guys had to dig deep, and Tom Schwartz, again, I don't think was ever going to really look great in with Dovbyshenko. I don't think he was ever going to have an easy night's work with him. No one does. And like I say, Dovbyshenko last time out, come over to the UK, took Matty Harris's O. He was in a confident mood and, yeah, went out there to Germany. And Tom Schwartz, like I say, had to dig deep. And it was, as expected, a points win for Tom Schwartz over 10 rounds. Moving now, though, to this one here. It went down at the Wembley Arena in London, United Kingdom. It was great to be back at the boxing as well. Obviously, I was there in attendance. Lucky me. Let's start with the undercard. Sean Noakes with a win, now 6-0. An expected points win against Lucas Barabas, who's now 2-9. Sean Noakes is, yeah, like I say, 6-0. Points win there over 6 rounds. Barabas down in the first round. I think he was quite unhappy with that. I don't know if it was a slip or whatever, but he wasn't best pleased. Aloys Yumbi of Lewisham, he's now 5-1. A KO in the first round against the pretty tough Eric Nazarian, who's now 29-34 with 4 draws. I think he's only been stopped maybe 5 or 6 times. Last time out, I'm pretty sure he boxed Roman Fury, one of the brothers of Tyson Fury, went the distance with him. But here, he was down and out with I think, about 30 seconds gone in the first round. So Yumbi, you know, certainly come to, you know, to throw the hands early on, like I expected. And this fight was actually the very last fight on the card. It was untelevised, and I think they managed to capture it perfectly in the background. You know, when they were talking about the Joyce outcome, you could just see over the shoulders, apparently, Yumbi knocking out Nazarian. I actually didn't see it. I'd left the venue. I was hurrying back to my parked car, which was about a mile away. The parking around Wembley is not too great at the best of times. So yeah, all the best to Aloys Yumbi, who is a pretty nice guy. I got sat next to him at York Hall a few months ago, and we were sat together and we were talking for quite a while. I quite took a liking to Yumbi. All the best to him. Also on the card, Tommy Fletcher, now 6-0, a TKO in round 4 against Alberto Tapia, now 3-5. I think Tapia was from Spain. It was a bizarre performance, really, from the referee, Marcus McDonnell, because Tapia was down twice in the first round, twice in the second round, and then once in the third round. So he'd been down five times, and Marcus McDonald allowed it to carry on every time. I was sitting with a few guys in the media row, and after two knockdowns, we were saying, okay, the next knockdown, you know, the referee's going to wave it off. He goes down again for the third time. Okay, the next knockdown, surely he's going to wave it off. He goes down for the fourth time. All right, the next knockdown, surely he's going to wave it off. He goes down for the fifth time. Then he gets back up again, and we were like, maybe he's never going to stop this. And then eventually he'd seen enough. It says that the corner threw the towel in. I don't remember that. I think Marcus McDonald just at some point decided, well, yeah, he's not going to win this fight. Why don't I just stop it? Which is what he should have probably done a few rounds earlier. So a fourth round TKO victory there for Tommy Fletcher. The fourth round was the only round he didn't knock Tapia down in. Also on the card, Moses Itauma, still just 18 years of age. He's now 5-0, a TKO in the first round against the usually very tough Amin Buscetta, who's now 7-9. He'd only been stopped one time in his eight losses. He's been stopped here, though, and he was down twice in that first round. There was a moment where he was backed up on the ropes, and Itauma just let the shots go. A huge combination. Really, really fast as well. A lot of people saying he looked like a middleweight in there. It was good to see. And like I say, Moses Itauma, I think there was a hell of a lot of pressure on him as soon as he turned pro. Got two back-to-back knockouts. Then went the distance two times. A lot of people already saying, he's maybe not as special as we once thought. And like I say, I think that was crazy claims to say that. He gets in there with this guy, Buscetta. Once again, on paper, you'd probably say that Itauma was going to go a few rounds with him, and he gets him out in just a round. So he's back to everyone's favourite young heavyweight again, I'd say. Also on the card as well, Royston Barney Smith, another win for him. He had his opponent, Engel Gomez, down twice, I think in round two and round three, a six-round points win. Or a points win after six rounds, I should say. Royston Barney Smith now 7-0. Engel Gomez now 8-18 with a draw. Ezra Taylor as well. I tell you what, this was a bit mad. He's now 7-0. I always thought he'd win the fight, but I didn't expect him to walk through Joel McIntyre, and a lot of people did. In the end, he didn't walk through Joel McIntyre, although he did dominate large parts of the fight. We got into the eighth round, the eighth and final round, and he actually got the stoppage at 2 minutes 59 seconds. It was literally the end of the round. Joel McIntyre, 1 second left, and he would have made it to the cards. He should have probably took a knee. He was on the ropes. He hadn't been dropped at all, but he was on the ropes, taking a bit of a pummeling, and, you know, I was a bit annoyed with the referee as well, because like I say, just 1 second left on the clock. The referee's already heard that 10-second clapper about 9 seconds ago. And yeah, I didn't really like that refereeing, to be honest with you. So I don't think that Ezra Taylor deserved the stoppage there. In my opinion, he should be 7-0 with 4 KOs, but he's now 7-0 with 5 KOs, whatever. Joel McIntyre sadly gets stopped. He's now 20-8. That means he's lost 4 on the bounce now, 2 by stoppage, although this one I don't think should have been. Also on the card, we had him on last week's show, Zach Parker, now 23-1. He was able to beat Khalid Gradia, or I think they actually pronounced him Khalid Graidia or something like that on the night. But anyway, Zach Parker, you know, I always thought it was going to be quite interesting to see how he returned to the ring after losing to John Ryder, obviously. And yeah, I was eager to see what he'd look like. Got in there. I think he looked really, really good early on. I loved his head movement. I loved the fact he was throwing lead right hooks to the body from that southpaw stance. That was interesting. And yeah, this guy that he got in with was a really, really tough guy. Obviously, you've seen him on these shores before. Went the distance with Carol Itauma, went the distance with Ezra Taylor, went the distance with Dan Aziz, but didn't go the distance with Zach Parker. He retired on his store after 7 rounds. I actually thought that Zach Parker maybe had tired a little bit as well, actually, at that point. You know, as the rounds went on, like I say, been out the ring for quite a long time. It was understandable, but yeah, I thought he'd slowed down just a bit, but again, his opponent didn't want to know, so he's only been stopped twice in 12 losses there. Good win for Zach Parker, who, of course, after that called out Anthony Yard. Speaking of the devil, Anthony Yard now 24-3, a KO in the second round against Jorge Silva, who didn't have much notice at all. He's now 22-9. It was always going to go that way. Silva down once prior to the stoppage. Yard, just great to see him back, really. Friend of the show, really nice guy, Anthony Yard. Known him a long time. Kind of lost contact with him, actually. Haven't spoke to him for a few years now, but, you know, was a good friend of mine. Went down to the Peacock Gym to see him spar before. And yeah, you know, was in a great fight last time against Artur Beterbiev, come back with an easy touch here, and he's already talking about getting in with the winner of Aziz and Buatsi next year. That's a fight I'd love to see. Also on the card, Pierce O'Leary, now 13-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Kane Gardner, now 16-3. It was for the WBC International Super Lightweight title. O'Leary cut in round 5, I think, is his left eye. I wasn't in the best of seats, so I actually didn't know he'd been cut until, you know, until I saw the notes after the fight. But he dominated the fight, really, Pierce O'Leary. He looks so strong. I don't think he's got the longest of arms. He's quite kind of small and, you know, for me, like a super lightweight, he seems small for super lightweight, in my opinion, from where I was sat. Which isn't a great seat, like I say, but looks a bit small. Looks like he's got kind of small arms, but obviously really good boxing brain, really good boxing skills, and you know, I think he's very, very strong. He's kind of got like a big torso, yet he's not that tall. It's a bit of a strange body shape, I think, but, you know, yeah, it works for him, and he's a good fighter, and he dominated Kane Gardner there. I don't even know if you could give Kane Gardner a round, to be honest with you. It was really one-sided. I can't remember the scorecards in the end. And yeah, the main event, I'm going to come to you, Eddie. Zhilei Zhang, 26-1 with a draw. The one loss, very disputed, obviously. We've touched on that before. Joe Joyce, now 15-2. It's two back-to-back stoppage defeats. The first fight with him and Zhang, obviously, it was stopped due to the enlarged eye, and it was at a point in the fight where it looked like Joyce was starting to take over. This time, though, definitive. Third round KO for Zhang. No disputing, no controversy, and he probably slams the door shut now on this saga between him and Joyce. Credit to him. I don't think you can take too much away from Zhang. I'll get to it when I speak about the fight, obviously. But it was for the WBO Interim World Heavyweight title. And, yeah, Zhilei Zhang did the business again on Joe Joyce.
Yeah, man. Unfortunate for Joyce, you know, to, you know, get to have been in that situation. But, you know, like I said it before, man, I just didn't really see much of anything that Joe had to really keep him off. And, you know, he tried early on. You could see him trying to establish the jab, trying to change, you know, levels and do certain things with it. But to be honest, it just looked like Zhang was being extremely patient early, looking for a shot that he knew would be available. And eventually the straight left hand started to once again become a factor. Caught him in, you know, a few times, like he buzzed him a little bit, got, you know, he got his attention, and then he actually ended it with the hook, but with the right hook, but those left hands were the catalyst and was really the reason for it. You could just see it. And then he tried to, you know, come in a little heavier, figuring that that might do the business. That might be what, you know, it might be the difference. They'll be able to actually hurt Zhang or get respect from Zhang. And it just did. It had a negative effect. It had a reverse effect. I think he was slower. He was even more in front of him. Then the first time he, like I said, he tried to establish his jab. He tried to establish range. He was doing some decent things, but he was just a little too slow. His reaction times defensively just is not there. He's a sitting duck for shots. And, you know, like I said before, when I was talking about, I think we were talking about before, and I mentioned Sam Peter, Sam Peterson, like, yeah, one of the best chins in boxing when he was taking flush right hands from Vladimir Klitschko and walking through him. And it's like, yeah, it works for the beginning of your career when you're young and you can take that. But eventually, not having the best chin in boxing thing isn't going to be good. I would much rather have the best defense in boxing and don't get hit very much. You preserve your chin that way. You understand what I'm saying? If Floyd Mayweather was taking those heavy, crazy right hands and left hooks like he was from Mosley every single time out, his chin would pretty much be gone, and he would end up losing those fights if he did that constantly. But when you look at a guy like Joe Joyce, who early on, you know, they call him the juggernaut, he seemed it, you know what I mean? Nobody seemed to be able to hurt him, and he seemed to be able to, you know, walk through most of the guy's offenses, and eventually he would get to you and wear you down. But this type of thing with this kind of guy, you can't do that. You can't stand in front of that big, strong guy and let him land those heavy shots. And then on top of that, he has experience and a certain level of skill that, you know, may not, you know, be everyone's cup of tea, but it works for him. And for Joyce to just expect to be able to walk through it after he already struggled with it in the first fight, I don't necessarily think that was his plan. But, you know, he probably thought, oh, I'm going to be better defensively. I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to be able to make him respect my power more, when in reality he should have been thinking distance. I got to get him after rounds and rounds and rounds of being in here. Then I could start picking up the pace. Even if I was Joyce, I would have figured, okay, I'm going to try to be a little bit, maybe a little heavier, but not too heavy, because I want to be able to move. I want to wear him down. I think that should have been his plan more so than, oh, I'm going to be bigger, so when I land shots, it's going to hurt him more. I think that's not his game in there with Zhang. And I think he really made that mistake, and I think that was what the difference was in the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to run through the rounds. Obviously, the first round, not even much to mention at all with that first round. It's a proper feel-out round. Joyce was just throwing jabs. Again, just targeting the body, which I had no problem with this time, because last time I had a problem with him standing in front of Zhang and throwing 6 or 7 punches to the body at once while standing square on. This time he was just jabbing to the body, single shots. Nothing wrong with that, I don't think. But yeah, he came in, as you mentioned, Eddie, 25 pounds heavier than the first fight. People were expecting a firefight from the first bell. A lot of people online were saying he's come in 25 pounds heavier. This means he's going to meet him in the middle of the ring and try and bulldoze him and bully him. I've wrote here in my notes, there's nothing to indicate that was the case in the first round. Joyce was doing a lot of moving in that first round, which I found interesting. I always said, I've seen Zhang fight so many times. I feel like a broken record saying this. I've seen Zhang fight so many times because he's such a big guy. Most of his opponents have been smaller than him. He fights smaller guys, quicker guys, guys that have quicker feet than him. He struggles with absolutely everyone who is quick on their feet. Joyce obviously isn't quick on his feet. And he decides to put 25 pounds on to be even slower on his feet, and then opts to box off the back foot. It's like, what the hell is going on? You put pounds on to come forward, not go backwards. I don't understand that. Again, I always thought if he needs to do anything to his weight, he needs to lose some weight so he's a bit quicker on his feet, even though that's not his style. But here he puts on more weight and then tries to box going backwards, which again is not his style. He's doing it being bigger and heavier and slower. Didn't make any sense at all. It was such a bad mistake tactically, again, from Joyce. I can't believe I'm saying this. I can't believe I'm sitting here now after witnessing that on the weekend. And Zhang has won again. I said the only way that Zhang can win this rematch, or even the first fight, is if Joyce messes up with his tactics so badly to a point where he loses the fight to Zhang. He did it in the first fight, got the tactics horribly wrong. I don't even know what the tactics were in the second fight. It was so unclear. You know, it makes no sense to me. But I don't like how everyone sees his weight and then jumps to conclusions on social media. That's what everyone was doing. That's why I'm saying, a lot of people saying, oh, he's packed on 25 pounds. He's going to come and meet him in the middle of the ring. It's going to be a 6-round firefight. Someone's going to go. It's never going to go the distance, blah, blah, blah. Way too many people just see the weights and become weight experts. And I hate getting involved in them kind of debates, because it's just so... That's not, you know, especially with the heavyweights, it's just not, that's not, that, you know, the weight stuff, it doesn't play a massive part all the time, I don't think, and you can't be sure of it as well. It's definitely not something you can see, you know, see the weight and totally expect that's how the fight's going to go. It's not going to go any different. But yeah, anyway, like I say, round two, big Zhang round. Obviously, Joe Joyce got caught with a shot at some point, and he temporarily went on the attack after being caught. I think it was that typical Joe Joyce ego you know, he gets hurt, he gets caught with a shot, he wants to come back with his own shots. It was good to see that. You know, he didn't seem like he wanted to retreat even more. And he actually had a nice couple of moments himself. But I noticed when he was throwing big shots, it was quite reckless. He left himself open for big shots, and he did take some big head-jolting shots. I don't think he was overly hurt in that second round. I do think that Zhang was loading up, and I was thinking, this is going to slow him down. And in a strange way, of course I wanted Joyce to win, but in a strange way, I was quite happy with round two, because Zhang was trying hard to hurt Joyce. And I thought, if Joyce can weather that storm, this is going to work out for him in the later rounds. Of course, we didn't get the later rounds, because in round three, I think the 10-second clapper went, if I'm not mistaken. And then Zhang lands that, I think it was a short right hook or whatever it was. And down and out, Joyce's face first. He gets up about, you know, about 9 seconds into the 10 count or whatever it was. Bravely gets up. And yeah, it was rightfully stopped. As soon as it was stopped, everyone got straight up out of their seats and headed for the exit. I'm talking media, I'm talking every fan. It was just, it was like, as soon as it was counted out, see you later. Felt sorry for Joyce, because Joyce is a really, really nice guy. And, you know, obviously turned pro really late, left himself a lot to do in such a short space of time, was very avoided. But just like that, people are saying, you know, he should probably retire, blah, blah, blah. I just think that Zhang is his kryptonite, and he's met a guy who is pretty much the Chinese version of himself, though I don't think Zhang has half the gas tank he does. I still think Joyce can beat a hell of a lot of heavyweights. I still think I'd love to see him in with Joshua. Obviously, Eddie Hearn seems to be shooting that down, saying it would be a dangerous fight for Joyce. Joshua's a lot stronger, or not stronger, a lot faster than Zhang. Probably punches harder than Zhang, all the rest of it. You know, it doesn't matter. That's not, it doesn't matter. That's, you know, styles make fights, not attributes. But yeah, I don't think he's you know, slipped in any way. I think it's pretty much the same old Joyce. It was just really disappointing from him once again here, though, and I can't make too many excuses for him. So yeah, I don't think he's done. I think he can jump straight back in. There's no O to protect. There's no fight to avenge the loss from now. This is done. We don't obviously want to see a third fight. No one does. I think he needs to go a different route. But let's not forget the guys he beat along the way in such a short space of time. Within just a few fights, beating the likes of B.Y. Jennings, beating the likes of, obviously, Daniel Dubois and others. I think, yeah, throw him in with someone like a... I don't think we're going to see the fight, but someone like a Joshua, throw him in. I wouldn't mind seeing him in, honestly, with you know, Usyk. Wouldn't mind seeing him in with Dubois again. Maybe not. Anyone really, Michael Hunter, someone like that, you know, there's you know, Jared Anderson, there's a lot of guys out there that I think he would still be able to beat, for sure. I just think that the Chinaman just doesn't match up well with him. What else can I say? I've seen a lot of people as well, because there was a thing that went viral on Twitter as well, like on Sunday or whatever, saying, drop your list of your top five heavyweights in the world right now. Zhang was on everyone's list, and that's mad to me as well, because again, I think that Joyce has made him look better than what he is, and I can't wait to see Zhang's next fight, because he's probably going to be a heavy favourite. I think there's a lot of guys that beat Zhang, but I was really shocked at how many people have got Zhang in their top five now. I mean, obviously, the top sort of three or four is obviously Fury, Joshua, Wilder, and Usyk. That's, I think, everyone's top four, really. The fifth spot is very much up for debate. Is it Dillian White? Is it Ruiz? Is it, you know, there's a few guys on that list. Is it Ortiz? Whatever. There's a lot of guys. Is it Jared Anderson, or is it a bit too early for him? Is it Michael Hunter? In my opinion, it probably would be. There's a lot of guys, but Zhang seemed to be, you know, in the top four or five. Some people putting him above Joshua just based off of that win there. Interesting. Anyway, I don't want to give it any more time. But, yeah, commiserations for Joe Joyce. Gutted for him. Really gutted for him. You know, really nice guy. And a lot of people jumping off the bandwagon. As for Zhang, like I say, went back to China, got a hero's welcome at the airport. I think he deserves it. 40 years of age. I mean, you just got to tip your hat to him, man. Honestly, he's done fantastic. Was you going to say something, Eddie, before we move to the final card of the review part?
Oh, no, it's just, you know, just like I said, congratulations to Zhang. Seems, you know, great guy. Met him, and I was in camp with him for a little bit. Like I said, a good guy, deserves it. Like, I feel bad for Joyce, but it's not over. His career is not over. He's just going to have to go back to the drawing board. There are some guys he could possibly give trouble. He can get some, definitely can get some more money. I just think he needs to take care of himself as he goes. You know, he needs to be a lot more conscious of defense and just try not to be, you know, take too many more unnecessary punches, you know, just to prove that you're tough. Go in there, try to win, but also make sure you take care of yourself.
Moving now to the final card of the weekend. It went down at the Carib Royale Orlando in Florida, USA. Something you just said there, Eddie, about not taking punches. What did you say? Say that bit again.
I was basically saying just take care of yourself, not going in there recklessly, just, you know, just to prove that you're tough. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, you want people to be, you know, you want to have the fanfare. You want people to respect you, but you can get them to respect you by being smarter defensively as well.
There we go. And I wanted you to say that again because it leads me straight into the main event over here. Richardson Hitchens, friend of the show. We had him on about 3 weeks ago. He's now 17-0, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds against Jose Zepeda, now 37-4. It was for the IBF North American, the WBC Silver, and the WBO NABO Super Lightweight titles. Richardson Hitchens, like I say, 17-0. And he did exactly what you said, Eddie. Didn't take punches just to prove he was tough to the crowd. Won the fight without really taking a big shot at all night long. Some people were tweeting during the fight, has Zepeda landed a shot yet? That's how great Richardson Hitchens' performance was. He came out on social media afterwards. He said, I don't give a damn what anyone says. You know, you win the fight. It's called, you know, hitting and not getting hit kind of thing. That's what the game is, and I don't really care. But a lot of people not happy with the performance just because he didn't take many shots. They're saying it was boring. Oh, God. We honestly, me and Eddie agree when it comes to this stuff. Like, you know, don't take shots for the sake of it. So there's no clash with me and Eddie here. We're both going to see the same angle here. So we don't need Eddie to comment on this. We know that I feel the same as he does. What a load of rubbish. You don't need to take punches in the face just to entertain a crowd full of people. If you can, you know, not take shots and prolong your career, then you're going to have many more paydays and beat many more good fighters because you're going to be fresh enough still without taking all those big shots to do so. So the key to longevity is not getting hit. And longevity means you can beat better fighters over the long run and make more money. So, sorry that he didn't give us a 12-round ding-dong. But, I think on last week's show I might have said that Jose Zepeda is a former world champion, but I was actually startled when I realised he's never actually held a belt. I thought he had held a belt. What a shame. If he doesn't win a world title, I'm sure he's probably at the end of his career really now. It's his 41st fight. If he doesn't win a world title in his remaining few fights of his career, what a great shame. He's going to go down as probably one of the best fighters in the recent years that hasn't won a world title. So, yeah, credit to Richardson Hitchens. Really happy for him. Really happy that a young guy doesn't really give a damn what the crowd think. You know, it's all about yourself in there. It's a lonely sport at the end of the day, as we all know. Also on that card, Jessica McCaskill, friend of the show, somehow managed to keep three of her belts. Two of her belts, whatever it is. She's now 12-3 with a draw. Sandy Ryan in the other corner from the UK, trained by Clifton Mitchell, Eddie, you know him. She's now 6-1 with a draw. Split draw over 10 2-minute rounds. Absolutely everyone knows it was a horrendous, horrendous decision from the judges there to give it a draw. Sandy Ryan dominated the fight big time. Most people saying they can't even give McCaskill 3 rounds. Some people saying at the very best you could give her 2 rounds. I think one of the scorecards was, 97-93 for McCaskill. That needs investigating. Like, I can see that the other way around. I can actually see that the other way around, but I cannot see it for McCaskill. Horrendous scorecards. I do not know how she's managed to hold on to her titles. I think Jessica McCaskill probably needs a new trainer. She does not look like the same fighter she used to be. She just seems to go into these fights and have wars with these girls every single time. It doesn't work right. I think she's a lot better than she's shown in previous fights. But the way she's fighting now at the moment, the momentum she's got and everything, it's like a woman that is on the way out. She's only had 15 fights, or now 16 fights. She looks like a shot fighter all of a sudden. I think she needs a new trainer, man. I know that she's, you know, in a relationship with her trainer, but, you know, I don't think he's the right guy for her in terms of training, maybe outside of the ring. Anyway, whatever, all the best to Jessica McCaskill. She is a friend of the show. Sandy Ryan isn't. Also on the card, Austin Ammo Williams with a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Steve Rolls. He's now 15-0. Steve Rolls 22-3. It was for the IBF North American middleweight title. Austin Williams largely dominant. I expected him to win on points because Rolls is quite a tough guy. But there was a few rounds I think Rolls, you know, did well in around about the midway part of it. But it was clear to see that Williams was much better than Rolls, you know, had a lot more than Rolls could handle. And yeah, like I say, Rolls is a tough guy. Took Edgar Belanga the distance, only been stopped the one time to Golovkin. So I knew we'd see a few rounds. And then after a certain point, Austin Ammo Williams, I don't want to say slowed down, but I think the opportunities weren't as forthcoming as they were maybe early on. I think early on some people thought he might get a stoppage, but after a certain few rounds it seemed like he was just going to cruise to a dominant points win, which he did. And also on the card as well, the return to the ring for Conor Benn. He's now 22-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds there against Rodolfo Orozco, who's now 32-4 with three draws. Orozco had never been stopped, yet the UK bookies at least were expecting Conor Benn to go in there and knock him out easy. I believe Conor Benn to win on points was 4-1, and the over-under was set at 4.5 rounds, which I of course jumped on. I couldn't believe that. I thought he would, you know, he would go a few rounds. He'd been obviously inactive. He's up at 154 for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, and he's getting in with a Mexican who's never been stopped. So all of that tells me it could be a tough fight, and the Mexican's a pretty good puncher as well. What I didn't know, though, was that the Mexican started his career at light flyweight, if I'm not mistaken. He's found himself up at 154, and he's found himself going 10 rounds with Conor Benn. I don't know what to make of that, but dominant performance from Conor Benn. He probably didn't lose a round. But yeah, again, a lot of people not happy with him back in the ring for obvious reasons. A lot of people jumping on it saying, you know, you was expected to walk through this guy, you didn't. And it wasn't really the performance that got everyone excited for his next fight kind of thing. Like, if he got in there and smashed this guy who'd never been stopped in like two rounds and then calls out Chris Eubank Jr. for that what seems like inevitable fight, everyone would have been excited for it. But this was a bit of a snooze fest, really. I mean, he tried his best. He looked good at times, actually. I liked his head movement. I thought his head movement was pretty good. But like I say, if you win a fight in dominating style, and I'm saying that the best thing about it was your own head movement, maybe that says something. But no offense intended there for Conor Benn. I like him. I like his father, of course, who's been on the show. Fantastic, Nigel Benn. And all the best to him. Like I said, I don't know the ins and outs. I'm not going to be one of those guys in the media that likes to, you know, jump the gun, as they say. You know, just it is what it is. I'm not interested in that side of the sport, unfortunately. I don't like drug cheats, but I don't know the facts, and I'm not going to jump on rumours and, you know, trial him in my own mind with no evidence. It's just a silly thing to do, I think, as somebody in the media. But all the best to young Conor Benn. And like I say, wasn't the most electrifying performance, but he's been out the ring for a while. He was out there in America. I don't think he had tons of notice. And he's got him with a Mexican who's never been stopped before. Tough guy, a big puncher. I give him a pass. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated, undisputed female super lightweight champion of the world. But more than that, in my opinion, the face of women's boxing. It is, of course, Miss Chantel Cameron. Chantel, welcome back on the show.
Great, and thanks for having me back on.
No problem at all. So, Chantel, we last spoke back in April. At the time, you were getting ready to fight Katie Taylor in Dublin. We're speaking again today. It's September. You're getting ready to fight Katie Taylor in Dublin. Has anything happened in between both of these phone calls by any chance?
Well, I got the win over Katie, so that kind of done me a few favours. But I've just been busy, to be honest. It's just, I think I said to you last time, it's like, I've been boxing now, I'm at the stage of my career where I'm making plans outside of boxing as well. So after my fight with Katie, I've just been kind of busy planting seeds elsewhere. But I'm back in camp now, fully focused and ready to go and do the job again.
There we go. But yeah, talk me through that fight. I mean, yeah, the night that for me made you the face of women's boxing, hands down.
Yeah, it was... My team always said, like, I'm going to be the one to beat Katie Taylor and that. And obviously, I'm my own worst critic, so I always had the doubts. But obviously, like, yeah, you kind of listen to your team, but at the same time, back of my head thinking, but am I really though? Like, Katie, she's had hard fights before, and she's got the decision. I'm going over to Dublin, her homecoming, massive night what was supposed to be for Katie. Like, how the hell am I going to get a decision in Dublin when it's a hard job at task anyway? But I've done it, and to be honest with you, I actually shocked myself. And I shocked a lot of people. I broke a lot of hearts out there. Even, I think at the end, I think I broke his heart. He never wanted me to win. You can tell by his face and his expressions and everything. So I've done that. But also, the main thing is, like, kind of like, forget everyone else. I've done it for myself, and I shocked myself because I really did do it. And my team always said to me, you do it, you're the one to beat Katie Taylor. The first time I stepped in Jamie's gym, he said that to me. And I did do it, yeah. But now it's kind of like, that's history now. Been there, done that, but now I've just got to go and do it again. But I've got to do it better because I've got to make it more convincing. Got to put better performance on and make sure that I can get done over there. I've got to make sure that I do a proper job. That way the judges ain't going to be swayed. That's my big concern now.
Yeah, because I was actually going to say about that, you were obviously in Dublin before they announced the decision. Were you a little bit worried about what the decision might be or not?
Yeah, when I heard the first scorecard, a draw, and I thought, no way, because it was a good fight, yeah, but I wouldn't say it was like close enough to give it a draw. And even the rematch, kind of like, obviously, the rematch is happening, but a lot of people are saying, like, it wasn't one of them fights where it needed a rematch to make it happen again. It wasn't one of them fights where, like, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor, like, that was a close fight. And in my opinion, I would edge Serrano to win. So maybe that was a rematch. Delphine and Katie, I think that, again, that warranted a rematch because there were fights that were, like, it could have gone either way. And again, the first one, I would have gone for Delphine. So it's just kind of like, when the first scorecard come out, I thought, oh God, like, yeah, that's my belt's gone. And to be honest with you, when I was out there and I was like listening to the crowd and stuff, I thought, yeah, there's not a chance I'm winning this, because sometimes, luckily enough, I had good judges in that were fair, except for the one that gave it a draw. But ones that weren't being influenced by the crowd, because that was playing in my head as well. I'm very good at switching off in the crowd and just blank everything out. But over there, I think because my concern was the fact that I had the worry of being jobbed, I was listening to the crowd and it was putting me off. It was like, shit, the crowd's going mad for shots that weren't, like, hardly landed. They'll hit my arms, majority of them, and the crowd would go berserk. And I was thinking, I'm not getting this. And I can remember it must have been about the 6th, 7th, and I just started like getting a bit disheartened, thinking I can't get rid of her because she's tough and she's a great fighter, and everything was just all over the place. So again, like, when I look back at the fight, I don't think I boxed my best, and I think I don't know what Katie, I obviously don't know Katie, I don't know what she's saying, what she's thinking, but she's gonna probably say that she weren't the best on the night as well. But at the same time, exactly the same as me. Like, that wasn't the best me. And I know that I've had better spars where I've performed better in a sparring session, but it's just that the first time I've been on such a big stage, had everything against me, and yeah, it was a new challenge for me, and I'm just glad I overcome it.
That was such a brilliant answer, actually, because you went into so much detail there. Few things I wanted to pick out there. Obviously, you said that, you know, the crowd got in your head a little bit. Obviously, you need to learn from that in the second fight. When Katie would do that thing where she kind of, like, you know, she lets like a 10-punch combination go, but it's not really anything of note, and the crowd go absolutely mental. She does that a lot. She tries to steal rounds like that. Yeah, exactly.
So to be fair, we actually prepared for that. So we kind of, like, obviously I speak to Tasha Joyner, I speak to Amanda Savannah, and Tasha said, like, look, she doesn't like the body shots and she does burgle rounds, so just make sure you're on it. But the thing is with me is I have a high work rate as well. So the fact that I've got her high work rate, as soon as she was throwing, I'll throw as well. So obviously the crowd weren't shouting for me. So in a judge's eyes, it looks like it's quite influencing that Katie's scoring the better shots, but it wasn't the case. But I think that was just Katie's advantage on the night.
Yeah, for sure. I agree 100%. And I know that you genuinely felt Katie would have never fought you. One of the few people in boxing media that publicly said on countless occasions that I felt you'd beat her if you had the chance. You got the chance.
You had my back.
Absolutely. Katie came up to your weight. And I remember last time we spoke in that interview, you let it slip to me in that interview that actually if you were asked to go down, you probably would have. How does it feel? And I'm sure you respect Katie probably more now than ever before, even.
Yeah, of course, got a lot of respect for Katie. I think she's a brilliant fighter. What she's done for women's boxing, but at the same time, I'm boxing her for the second time. Again, I've got everything to lose, so I've got to kind of get rid of that respect because I respected her so much last time, and she does have an aura about her where you're like, wow, you're boxing Katie Taylor. But again, this fight's completely different. This time it's like, I'm a little bit frustrated. I've got more spite in me. And you know what? I box a lot better when I do have that spite and I have that bit of nastiness about me. Whereas the first fight, I was in awe of Katie Taylor. I was kind of bad to say and bad to admit, but I was glad to be there. I thought the fight would never happen. Never thought I'd be facing Katie Taylor. And it was a big night for me. And I've been there and done that now, so now it's kind of like I'm not getting a chance at becoming two-weight undisputed. I beat McCaskill, never got a chance to fight McCaskill for her belts after I just beaten her. Beat Katie Taylor, I offered in the ring, I'll go down to lightweight, drain me and take me down. I've not been lightweight for about 4 or 5 years. Said it to my team after, I said, look, do the rematch, but let's put Katie belts on the line now, and nothing come from it. So this time it's a bit different because I'm putting everything on the table again. And I also said, right, if I'm boxing at 140, I'm defending my belts, at least, like, let's change location. Doesn't even have to be UK. I said Abu Dhabi, anywhere in the Middle East, like, let's just do it on neutral playing grounds. Because obviously my worry now is the judging, because I've done it the first time, but am I going to get it the second time? It's a big gamble again. So, definitely going in there with a completely different mindset, because I just look at it now as I literally have everything to lose. Whereas the first time around, I was happy to be there and it was an honour to face Katie Taylor.
Yeah, I think it's your stage now. Amanda Serrano publicly tweeted a really nice tweet the other day, giving you your flowers, really. It was really nice. It was a wholesome exchange from two of the best women in the sport. That was a cool touch from Serrano there, Chantel.
Yeah, that was lovely. Do you know what I mean? Amanda Serrano didn't have to do that. Ebony Bridges, to be fair, she's very good at supporting other female fighters. She's always like bigging everyone up, but not a lot of women boxers do it. My friend Louise Orton, I'm always picking her up because she's such a talent, but she's not had the opportunity. And I say to everyone, as soon as my friend has her debut as soon as people start seeing like what she can do, she's going to open up a lot of eyes and she'll be getting snapped up, but she's been very unlucky. She's not been given the opportunities. And like some of us women, we are so lucky that we've had the opportunities, and been given the platform, whereas there's some women that are bloody, they're unreal, they're such good fighters, but they're just waiting for their chance. So people like Amanda Serrano, who have in my back, it was nice because everyone wants to be top dog, don't they? And Amanda Serrano, she's done everything she's had to do. She's got her own legacy. She's got her own career. She's absolutely smashed it, and she can still go out of her way to big me up and just think, really, like, what a woman that is, because she really didn't have to do that.
Yeah, she's quality, Amanda. I'm a big fan
of
hers.
Yeah, quality in and out the ring. That's why you got nothing but respect for her. It's good, like, she's a good pioneer for women's boxing and the 3-minute rounds as well. Like, it took someone like Amanda to actually go for 3 minutes. So I wanted 3-minute rounds last year on my fight in May. Me and Jamie said, I was fighting there, Victoria Bustos, and we said, right, let's go for 3-minute rounds, and it was declined. So the fact that Amanda's doing 3-minute rounds is good to see, because I even wanted that last year. And I can remember I was at the press conference with Amanda and Katie, and Amanda said on the table, like, come on, Katie, let's make this one 3-minute rounds. So Amanda's been booting for 3-minute rounds for ages, and she's finally getting that shot. And opening the door up for the rest of us women, because now that's all that's on my mind. If Amanda can do 3-minute rounds, then give me a dance partner who will do 3-minute rounds with me as well.
Yeah, I saw Eddie Hearn accidentally put 3-minute rounds in a tweet the other day. I'm sure you'd have loved to have 3 minutes in this rematch.
Yeah, he put it out there, and I think if you put it out there on social media, that's it, it's cemented. Once it's out there on the internet, that should be it. There's no turning back, but yeah, it was a typo.
And this rematch, obviously the date, November 25th, as you say, back in Dublin, back in the very same arena. Should we expect anything different in this second fight, Chantel? And is there anything that you felt you could have done better, in this rematch than the first fight?
Yeah, so when I actually watched the fight back, there was so much I'd done. I was just throwing like meaningless shots, just basically trying to not have rounds stole off me. So there was loads of mistakes I made, like so many. And this time I think I'm going to be a lot better, really do. I think I'm going to be a lot better. I think I'm going to be, have a bit more confidence about me. I'm going to select my shots better. And yeah, just everything comes to me a lot better.
And is Katie's career on the line, or is that harsh, Chantel?
Yeah, I think that's a bit harsh. I wouldn't say that. I think I'm kind of shocked that she did take the rematch, because she could have had another homecoming in Ireland with an easier opponent, where she took the loss to me, and you've got to give her all credit, because she said, well, I want to do it again in Ireland. So I kind of have to be like, you know what, fair play to you. But at the same time, it's selfish sport, and like, I don't care where I am, who it is, like, you're not beating me. So, like, I'm going in there, and if she has another loss to me, then she can still have the Amanda Serrano rematch, but will there be as much excitement about it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think everyone would want to see that fight, because it was such a good fight, the first one. But another loss to me, it's kind of, like, you don't know what happens. Like, Katie's always going to be a massive seller and a massive selling point, but it just all depends on Katie, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I just think the age factor, and also I don't think she's ever going to want to become an opponent going into multiple fights expecting to possibly lose. We're kind of flying through everything I had for you, to be honest with you, Chantel. I wanted to ask how Jack's doing, obviously preparing for Linares.
Yeah, great. To be honest with you, the whole camp's absolutely flying. Obviously, Aki's on that bill as well. And Aki's fighting for the Commonwealth title. So the whole gym's in good spirits and everyone's preparing.
Excellent. Excellent to hear. Chantel, as always, the pleasure is mine having you on. Thank you for your time. And I can't wait to see you go out there and prove once again that you can do this on this stage.
Thank you.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. It's a blockbuster fight. It really, really is, Eddie. It's been announced this week. Devin Haney will challenge the WBC World Super Lightweight Champion, Mr. Regis Progre. It's going down in San Francisco, December the 9th, live on DAZN pay-per-view. I tell you what a fight, man. What a fight. Just briefly, Eddie, because I'm sure we'll do so much more on it closer to the time, but what a great fight. And who's your prediction right now this far out?
Oh, honestly, it's hard. It's really hard this one because Regis Prograis is such a good puncher, tough guy. Kind of an awkward style, which can be difficult, really difficult to deal with for somebody who is as, accomplished as Devin Haney as far as skills and time spent in boxing and training. It's like sometimes awkward styles, you know, throwing punches in ways you're not used to, a guy moving in a way that you're not really used to, what you're used to seeing. You know what I mean? I mean, even with like Lomachenko, like we've seen with Lomachenko, he has, I don't want to call it awkward necessarily, but it is to a degree awkward what Lomachenko does and how he throws certain combinations. You could tell that it bothered Devin Haney. So having a guy like Regis Prograis, who's a little different than the average, he's not normal, doesn't throw the combinations 100% the same. Certain things he does is a little out of line to what, you know, you would normally see. It may not be as aesthetically pleasing to everyone, but I mean, there's other things that he does that is really, really good too, but it's just different. So, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a pretty difficult fight. And like I said, Devin Haney's not a really huge puncher. So to get the respect and then Regis Prograis has a really good chin. He's a really tough guy and he's going to be in your face all night for sure. And he can crack. It's going to be a hard fight. It's not going to be easy. You know what I mean? Like I said, he has Devin has a lot of, he has great skills. He's, you know, he's, like I said, he's accomplished, but it's going to be a tough fight, man. I don't even know. I don't even know how to pick it. To be honest, I mean, I would, you know, smart money says pick Devin Haney, but I don't know if that's the best option to do, man. I think it's going to be a hell of a tough fight for Devin Haney fighting Prograis.
Well, there we go. We wanted to keep it brief, but you didn't listen. It's all good. Moving on to the next part. Moving on to the next part. There's one other piece of news. Shakur Stevenson, this official, obviously gets in with Edwin De Los Santos. And we're going to see the disappointing fight in a way, really. I think there's a few guys that are being looked over and stepped over in the rankings. But Navarrete gets in with Robson Conceição. Yeah, that's a doubleheader going down at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, November the 16th, live on ESPN. Anyway, moving on to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here tomorrow at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida, USA. Friend of the show, friend of ours, Ivana Habazin, 21-5, former world champion, back in a six-rounder against Timia Belic, who is 7-9. All the best there to Ivana. Moving now to the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. Over here, friend of the show, Tevin Farmer, former world champion, 31-5 with a draw. I think it's his second comeback fight, if I'm not mistaken. He gets in with Oscar Barajas, who is 7-8 with one draw. That's over eight rounds here at lightweight, by the way. Moving now to a place in Mexico, in Jalisco, I think it is. We're going to see Michael Hunter, the heavyweight friend of the show, of course, back in action finally after quite a long time out of it. He's been having these one-round boxing Super League fights, I think they're called, or whatever they are. Not a big fan of those at all, but he's back finally, and I believe it's over 10 rounds. He gets in with a Mexican heavyweight called Miguel Cubos, who isn't really going to give him any kind of threats, I don't think. It's just a comeback fight. It's an easy one, I would say. Just trying to locate the record of this guy. Michael Hunter, 20-1 with two draws. Like I say, almost 2 years out of the ring. Hasn't boxed since that split draw to Jerry Forrest, December 2021. And, yeah, gets in with this guy here. Miguel Cubos, who has a pro record of 14-24 with one draw. He's been stopped 13 times. It's just an easy fight here. Moving on. We're going to go now to Turkey. And it's a really interesting fight, actually, at the Regnum Carrier Hotel in Antalya, over here, Murat Gassiev, 30-1 for the WBA Intercontinental Heavyweight title, gets in with Otto Wallin, 25-1. Again, the one loss inflicted by Tyson Fury on Wallin's resume, and the one loss on Gassiev's resume to Oleksandr Usyk. These two are very, very good fighters. I tell you what, I'm really excited for this, man. I really am. Obviously, Gassiev's been extremely inactive since losing to Usyk over 5 years ago. The guy's had four fights and hasn't been over four rounds in that time. And the opposition's been pretty poor. Nuri Seferi, Michael Wallish, Carlos Welch, and last time out got in with Mike Balogun. A lot of people saying that Mike Balogun seemed to have took a dive there in the second round. Who knows? But yeah, gets in with Otto Wallin. And Otto Wallin, since that fight with Tyson Fury, I mean, arguably could have you know, got a TKO stoppage on a cut. Very unlucky to have not got that, I think. Since then, he's beaten some decent fighters. Travis Kaufman, Dominic Brazil, been in there with Kamille Sokolowski. He's been in good fights, but not really at that level. Like, you know, come back, beat Kaufman, beat Brazil, but then since then, it's took a little bit of a downward spiral in terms of his opposition. I think he just wants the big fights. I think he's very avoided, and he gets this shot against Gassiev. He's a 2-1 underdog. I think he's well worth a shot, especially to win on points. I really do. I think now, you know, it's now or never really for Gassiev. I think even though he's still young, I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I believe he's 29, like he's listed, but yeah, it just seems like he's been around for a long, long time since those cruiserweight days. Otto Wallin, big 6'5.5" southpaw. I swear to God, I really think he's got a big chance here. I almost want Otto Wallin to win, even though I'm not too bothered who wins. I think it's a great, great, great fight, though. Snuck under the radar even a little bit there. Moving now to York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. This one's going to be live on Sky. I'm not entirely sure the whole undercard is listed just yet, but we're going to see Callum Simpson 12-0. Didn't look the best last time out. You know, he seemed to struggle a little bit with the kind of difficult style of Boris Crichton, but he gets in here with Jose Macias, who's 28-12 with four draws. Been around the block a little bit, been in there with Eric Bazinyan, Pavel Siljagin, Kerman Leharaga, Solomon Sissoko, Erickson Lubin went the distance with him. He's generally quite a tough guy. Only been stopped the one time, and that was back in 2017 in the second round to a guy called Jose Leos, who was only 1-1-1. I'm not sure the story behind that one, but yeah, very tough guy. And they're expecting Callum Simpson probably to win this one on points, but you know, we'll have to wait and see. He's got 9 KOs from his 12 wins. But yeah, I think we're going to see some rounds here. On the card as well, the pro debut of Francesca Hennessy. That is the daughter of Mick Hennessy. She's in a 4-round contest. 2-minute rounds, obviously. No opponent just yet. Vidal Riley, 9-0, fighting here for the vacant English cruiserweight title over 10 rounds against Nathan Qualls, who is 12-0. Haven't seen anything of Nathan Qualls. Don't know how good he is at all, unfortunately. The main event, though, is for the vacant IBO World Lightweight Female title. We're going to see Caroline Dubois in another steady step up, I'd say, even though, you know, she's only 7 fights in. I think you can't expect much more, but she gets in with Magali Rodriguez, who's 22-6 with 4 draws, much more experienced as a pro, and a good fighter, to be honest with you. I mean, she's ranked number 3 in the world on BoxRec at lightweight. I don't know how much, you know, how much you can read into that. Caroline Dubois is ranked number 1 without even holding a belt. So I don't know if we can read too much into that at all. But she's, you know, she's generally tough. Been stopped just twice in her 6 losses. Most recent loss was 5 years ago almost. She lost to Erica Cruz. But yeah, she's beaten some decent ladies. Been in there with Estelle Mosley, who is the wife of Tony Yoka. That was her last fight. They actually fought to a majority draw over 10 twos. So yeah, I mean, you know, that one was for a world title there. and Caroline Dubois. It's more of a measuring stick type of fight, I think, this. But obviously, the IBO on the line. All the best to Caroline. I don't know if I'd say stoppage or not. I'm not sure. I've stopped betting on Caroline Dubois. I've said it before. Every time I back her to get a stoppage, she goes a distance. Every time I back her to get... to get a points win, she gets a stoppage. So I'm put off of betting on her. moving now to the Wembley Arena in London, United Kingdom. This one's going to be live on DAZN. We're going to see Maisie Rose Courtney, 4-0, getting in there with Martina Bernil, who's 5-2 with a draw. It's over 6-2s. All the girls on the card, on this card here, really expected to go the distance. Friend of the show, Shannon Ryan, 5-0, yet to get a knockout. She's in an 8 rounder against Xenia Zhonyek, who is 11-6. It's a step up, but again, I don't think Zhonyek's been stopped, so you'd expect this one to go the distance. We're going to see Rhiannon Dixon, 8-0, I think trained by Anthony Crawler. It's for the vacant EBU European lightweight title. She gets in with Katarina Fanders, who's 16-1, very experienced, quite a good fighter, but she was stopped late in her only loss to Terry Harper. Rhiannon Dixon, not really known for getting knockouts, quite feather-fisted, I think it's fair to say. But she is coming off her only stoppage win. So, yeah, I don't know what we're going to see there. But I think Fanders, you can't really write her off. I think she's got a good chance here. It's early on in the career of Dixon. It's a real big step up, actually. Also on the card, we're going to see... Siobhan Clark, he's 6-0. It's for the IBF International Cruiserweight title, which is currently vacant. He gets in with Vasil Dukar, who's 14-6 with two draws. That's over 10 rounds there. Vasil Dukar is quite a tough guy. Again, we've seen him a few times over here. Went the distance with Chris Billum Smith, went the distance with Jordan Thompson. Went 10 rounds with Mike Perez, but retired on his stall. Didn't want to come out for round 11. It was only a 12-rounder. Went 10 rounds. So very, very, very tough guy. You know, been in there with Kevin Lorena, Alexei Egorov, and many more decent fighters, you know. He's an opponent for the most part. You know, he's not really beating any great fighters, but... Yeah, Chev Clark's only 6-0, 5 KOs. Again, I would expect some rounds here. I think if he were to get a stoppage early, I'd be quite surprised. Also on the card, Ellie Scotney, once again, expected to go the distance here. She's 7-0, once again, hasn't scored a knockout just yet in her 7 fights. It's a 10 2-minute round contest for her IBF World Super Bantamweight title. It's her first defense. She gets in with Laura Griffa, who's 20-8. Only 1 KO win for Griffa, and she's never been stopped in her 8 losses. She's actually coming off 2 back-to-back wins, but prior to that, she was in awful form. She had lost 6 fights in a row, like I say, all on points. And her 2 comeback wins have been against, you know, 2 ladies who were 3-6-1 and 11-7-2. So, yeah, this is a big step up again for her. I wouldn't be surprised to see Scotney actually stop her late on, but I don't know. More than likely, it will go the distance. And the main event is a great, great fight. We're going to see Australia's Jai Opatai, 22-0, 17 KOs. He defends his IBF World Cruiserweight title against the UK's very own Jordan Thompson, 15-0, 12 KOs. Most people expecting it to not go the distance. I'm one of those people. I don't think Jordan Thompson's gas tank is that great. I remember seeing him get quite badly hurt against Vasil Dukar, who's on the undercard. But having said that, looked good last time out against Luke Watkins, but that's a drop down in level again. Jai Opatai looked fantastic in his last fight against Maris Bradis. It was a big upset. He beat Maris Bradis quite clearly. Suffered, I think, a broken jaw in that fight as well. You know, bit down on his gum shield, so to speak, and got the win. That is by far the biggest win and the biggest name on his record. No one is, you know, entirely sure of where his ceiling is or how far he can go in the sport, but that was a great win. But was it just Bradis just, you know, not seeming his old self, having to travel all the way, a long way from home, all the way to Australia, Broad Beach, and then losing on the cards, you know? It was a big upset. Big upset. But it was 14 months ago now, so So he's been a little bit rusty. Well, he might be a bit rusty here, Jai Oppertai. They're going to hope that that is the case. Like I say, coming off that injury, I think it was a broken jaw. It was some kind of injury. Had to have an operation. He was out for quite a while. But yeah, I'm actually hearing, it's not a rumour. I've heard directly that Jordan Thompson is looking excellent in the gym at the moment. So when I heard that from a very good source, I thought to myself, do you know what? Hold my horses a little bit here. I'm not too sure. I would have heavily favoured Oppertai if I hadn't heard that. I probably still favour Oppertai. In fact, I do favour Oppertai. But I just thought, all of a sudden, I'm not 100% sure anymore. Should be a good fight, though. Again, it's great to see two undefeated fighters who can both bang, getting in for a world title. All the best to Jordan Thompson. Coming down to the final card now to mention, Eddie. I'm going to be coming to you a few times here. It goes down at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's going to be live on Showtime pay-per-view. Bit of a stacked card, actually. Let's start right down the bottom. Friend of the show, Terrell Gaucher. What was he, 2012 Olympian or 2016 Olympian? Can't remember. 23-3 with a draw. He gets in with Keandre Leverwood, who's 23-8 with a draw. That's over 8 rounds. All the best to Gaucher. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Alexander Gvozdik. Obviously, you know, he came out of retirement recently. I think he boxed in Mexico, didn't he, against Rickards Bolotniks. That was on the Canelo Ryder undercard. He returned to the ring after a few years out since losing to Artur Beterbiev. It turns out he actually had one fight before that. But anyway, whatever. He's been back now for a little while. He's had two fights already this year. Was out the ring for almost 4 years. He's back here. He gets in with Isaac Rodriguez, 28-4. 22 KO wins, but 3 knockout defeats. Light heavyweight from Brazil. Got knocked out in 6 rounds by Damond Nicholson. I'm just looking down his resume. I don't really recognise many of these names. Beat Brian Vera. God almighty, that was back in 2010. Yeah, this guy's been around for a long, long time. Almost been a pro 20 years. How old is this guy? 38 years of age. Okay, it should be an easy touch here for Gvozdik. He should really and truly get the stoppage. What else do we have on this card? What else do we have? Frank Sanchez, 22-0. The Cuban who, you know, is listed at a fantastic age, 31 years of age, though I think he's probably closer to being 61. 22-0, 15 KOs. He gets in with Scott Alexander, who's 17-5 with 2 draws. Scott Alexander's last meaningful fight was against Zhilei Zhang. He was banged out in a round, but that's the only time he's been stopped. Even though I mentioned 5 losses, he's been quite durable. Lost to Travis Kaufman on points. That one was close. It was a majority decision loss. Lost to Carlos Negron on points. Such a low level guy. But again, they're expecting Frank Sanchez to go in there and like wipe him out within a round or two. He looked good last time, getting Daniel Martz out in just a round. But again, Daniel Martz is such a drop down in level. Daniel Martz 20-10 was his record. He gets in here with Scott Alexander. Honestly, the over under is set 2.5 rounds. I think we're going to see more than 2.5 rounds, but you know, it's an easy fight for Frank Sanchez. And we were talking earlier on in the show about top 5 heavyweights. I think Frank Sanchez needs to have a few bigger fights because there's nothing to say he can't become the 5th best heavyweight in the world. I just think they're holding him up for whatever reason. You know, he just hasn't really built off of taking Efia Jagbazoh. I think that has proved to be a really good win with the time gone. But since then, he's got him with Christian Hammer, Carlos Negron, Daniel Martz, and here Scott Alexander. I just don't understand it. The guy is certainly not getting any younger, and his hairline is just going back and back and back. Also on the card, Elijah Garcia, 15-0. He gets in with Jose Resendez, who's 14-1. That's over 10 rounds there at middleweight. Elijah Garcia saying, I think he wants to become a world champion next year. He's been very, very active. He's had, I think, 5 fights in the last 12 months. And this is another step up, really. He gets in with Resendez, who, you know, sprung a huge upset earlier on this year, knocking out Jarrett Hurd in the 10th and final round of their contest. He absolutely battered Jarrett Hurd. And that is really where he kind of sprung on the scene, so to speak. But yeah, should be a decent fight. He's a tough guy. Could be interesting. Also on the card, Yildiz Ugas, 27-5, gets in with friend of the show, Mario Barrios, 27-2. It's for the WBC Interim World Welterweight title. Good to see a belt on the line for these two guys. Two of the best at 147. Ugas, yeah, haven't seen him since that Errol Spence loss, which was a year and a half ago now. Barrios coming off a win last time out against Giovanni Santiago earlier this year, but prior to that, two defeats to, obviously, Javonte Tank Davis and Keith Thurman. Good fight, this one, Eddie. I'm expecting it to go the distance. I'm quite confident in that. I think Ugas is, you know, seriously underrated. But having said that, didn't look great against Spence. I think he had a couple of moments, but I expected a bit more from him. I was quite impressed with Spence that night, actually. But we haven't seen him since. And I worry about that little bit of ring rust. As for Mario Barrios, I think he was more suited to 140. He's up at 147 now. Obviously, box Keith Thurman, you know, in his first fight of the weight, was coming off that loss to Javonte. That was quite risky. But since then, a good win against Giovanni Santiago. Knocked him out. Something that Adrian Broner couldn't do. So should be good. And I'm hoping that Mario can get the job done. He's a really cool guy, Mario. I really like Mario a lot. Also on the card as well, Jesus Ramos, 20-0. This could potentially steal the show. 20-0, like I say. He has been building a fantastic resume of late. I remember him fighting Luke Santamaria, who sprung a few upsets against a few decent fighters, Luke Santamaria. Come through that fight, you know, in quite dominant fashion. Didn't stop him, though, because Santamaria is a real tough guy. Since then, I remember his last fight as well, beat up Joey Spencer quite bad. He's coming off that, and that was earlier this year. But Erickson Lubin, who a lot of people were tipping for really big things at one stage, seemed to go off the track a little bit. He looked pretty good earlier this year, knocking out Luis Arias, become the first man to stop Luis Arias. I expected that one to go, you know, to go to the cards. Luis Arias, I think, was coming off a good win at the time as well. I expected that to be a tough fight, but he made Luis Arias look pretty awful that night. So, yeah, a little bit of a flashback performance last time for Erickson Lubin. And just based off of that, as they say in boxing, you're only as good as your last fight, you know, your last showing. Well, his last showing was very good. Jesus Ramos is the heavy favourite, and I understand why. But Lubin, you know, he said it, I think, earlier on this week. He's beaten ex-world champions. I think he was talking about Jason Rosario. He's beaten Olympians. I think he was talking about Terrell Gaucher. And he's upset the odds on more than one occasion. And he seems to be in the right mind frame to get the job done here. I don't think it'll be easy for Jesus Ramos, but I wouldn't want to bet against him. He's just, I really think, you know, a fighter with a really bright future, despite me getting him completely confused with someone else. But yeah, the main event, Eddie, I'm sure you're going to say your piece on a few of these fights. I'm going to come to you here. Saul Canelo Alvarez, 59-2 with two draws, in search of win number 60 here, which is just incredible in itself. It's for the IBF, WBA, WBC and WBO undisputed super middleweight world titles. He gets in with Jermell Charlo, 35-1 with a draw. A lot of people were expecting him more than likely to be in with Jermell Charlo. That one was really unexpected. When this got announced, being Jermell and not Jermell, some people were saying, hang on a minute, have you put an E there instead of an A and got the wrong twin? But no, it ended up being Jermell. Jermell hasn't boxed for 16 months. And he looked good in that fight. You know, come back in the rematch against Brian Castaño, managed to get the stoppage. 16 months later, he gets in with Canelo. He has to put 14 pounds on to box at 168 here. Some people giving him a chance. Myself, Eddie, I'm not quite sure. I think that we're going to see, in my opinion, Canelo dominate this fight. I think that Jermell, I said I was going to come to you first, but I'm just carrying on, I suppose. Jermell, I can see sweeping some early rounds. I've just got a feeling that Jermell's work rate could cause a few issues early. I don't want to see him freeze, as a lot of people do, actually, when they get in with Canelo. I don't want to see him freeze, and I'm not entirely sure he will freeze. I can see him coming out, starting fast, trying to outwork Canelo early on, but I think at some point, Canelo will take over, and I can see this is very specific, I can see a stoppage for Canelo in the second half of the fight by body shot. I just can see it for some reason. But anyway, what's your thoughts on the main event and the undercard?
Yeah, the main event, man, you got to go. I feel like you got to go Canelo in this. I mean, obviously, you know, he's a little older now. He's had some fights, but he hasn't looked, you know, aside from the fight with Bivol, but that's because Bivol is a pretty good fighter, really, really high level guy. And it was up in weight. With this, he's fighting a guy who, quote unquote, is smaller, even though he's taller and he's capable of putting it on this frame. He doesn't have a super duper small frame, and you know, I've seen him in person, so the kid, he's not a small guy. But yeah, it's hard for me to go against Canelo in this. You know, he's going up and he's fighting a guy who has a hell of a lot of experience with bigger guys, smaller guys, guys around Charlo's weight. He's been in with a who's who. You know, he's a class fighter. It's hard to go against him in this. Although Charlo's had a good, you know, obviously a good couple of years. He's undisputed at 154. He's got a lot of confidence. He's got the ability. He's got power too. But my thing would have been, okay, well, you know, Charlo's getting in there with Canelo. You know, I would think that his best, you know, chance would be, you know, maybe catching him, hurting him, getting him out of there. But Canelo fought Triple G 3 times. Now, you know, the first 2 times, we'll count those. The last time, obviously, you know, Triple G wasn't the same guy, but he fought Triple G 3 times and one of the biggest punchers in boxing at the time. So, you know, and also one of the better boxers in boxing as well, even though his style doesn't necessarily scream boxing or, you know, skilled boxing, you know, because most, you know, he is – couple different things he does with his style that doesn't really look so exciting. He's not like a Floyd Mayweather kind of guy. There's really not a lot of special effects with his game, but he's still a good boxer. Anyway, yeah, it's just I don't think that Charlo would be able to get him out of there. I think that, like you said, Joe, his work rate, and because he's a smaller fighter coming up, would probably, if it's anything, is going to be problematic for Canelo early on. And kind of like if you think of Amir Khan, you know, Amir Khan was coming from like 40, 47. And Amir Khan's a real speedster, but the pace that Charlo can bring could be a little bit problematic because he is a smaller guy. But I just really, I'm having a hard time. Normally, if I think a guy could win, I'm really having a hard time figuring out how Charlo can pull a victory out. I mean, Canelo's a hell of a boxer. He's good defensively, tough, can take a shot, pretty good, obviously a great puncher, you know, IQ is out of, you know, is out of this world too. So it's really difficult for me to go with Charlo in this. I'm going to have to go Canelo. As far as the Lubin and Ramos fight, I remember Ramos beating, what's the kid's name? Brian, what was his name that Ramos beat? Joey Spencer. There we go. And I remember watching that, and I'm sitting there like, and he was taking crazy shots, Joey Spencer was. And Ramos, he's good, man. He is really good, tough guy, you know, good at, you know, good boxing. He's a good little fighter, strong, punch pretty good. I really love Erickson Lubin's style, his ability to box. He's such a professional. And he's got so many great qualities. The problem has been him getting caught and getting hurt by guys and you know, getting stopped. I mean, every single time. I think every fight he's lost has been by knockout, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Lubin, yeah, it's got to be. Towering Inferno and Charlie, yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, these two, I mean, those are two really good fighters, obviously, and they were at the top of their, you know, at the top of the game at that time. Don't get me wrong, we're at least moving in that direction. But he's just, he's, and I've seen him hurt in other fights that he's won, and it's just like, damn, if he could just find a way to be a little bit more, a little bit more defensively conscious to the point of almost, you know, dare I say, being boring, to stay away from getting caught with those shots. It's so difficult. I mean, at that weight, you know, fighting guys that, you know, at 54, and, you know, 47, 54 and 60 and all of that, these guys are so, you know, sharp, and, you know, it's really difficult for, you know, to literally swim without getting wet. It's really hard. But to be able to understand how to defend the shots enough, or take the shots in a way where it doesn't, you know, you don't take the full brunt of it. I mean, I haven't seen him with those capabilities. I mean, every single time I've seen him really hit, you know, it's obviously done the damage. You know what I'm saying? So I really like his style, and I really, really want to pick him in this fight. And I really hope he proves me wrong and can beat this. I mean, you know, I don't, you know, want to see a kid like, you know, Ramos be derailed early, but I would like to see Lubin win, but I would have to go with Ramos. I think he's you know, he's got the goods. He's tough. He's a good puncher. He's got a good bag with him. So it's going to be an extremely difficult fight for Lubin, even though he has the skills and the ability and power as well. I just don't know if he's going to be able to hold this kid off.
Well, there we go. Should be a great, great card, though, man. It really is stacked from top to bottom. I really like it. And obviously, prior to that, in the UK, unfortunately, two shows clashing, like I say, on Sky and on DAZN again. But yeah, lots and lots of boxing to sink your teeth into as a boxing fan this Saturday. Yeah, there's just so many great fights. I really don't know which one's going to steal the weekend. It's going to be interesting. There's so much competition. And even the smaller cards that you mentioned earlier, you know, going to be good to see our friends back in the ring. Tevin Farmer, Michael Hunter, Ivana. And yeah, that one going down in Turkey, don't forget. Murat Gassiev against Otto Wallin. So much to look at this weekend. But anyway, that brings this part of the show to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the undisputed champion of the world, the face of women's boxing, Miss Chantel Cameron. In part two, we did the news. We just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 415 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated face of female boxing, that being Miss Chantel Cameron, obviously the super lightweight undisputed champion of the world. Always great to have her back on. Cannot wait for the rematch with Katie Taylor. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. A couple things that I do just want to mention before I go. This week, or maybe last week, was the 8-year anniversary of the Box Hard Podcast, so I just want to thank you all once again. You know, people that, of course, listen every week, and people that don't get that time but listen periodically. Everyone who's listened to the show over the past 8 years, all the guests that we've had on, all the co-hosts that I've had on with myself, humongous thank you to absolutely everybody. That's a really cool thing. Can't believe we're here 8 years on, from 2015 to 2023. Also, I think I mentioned it on last week's show. I may have not. I can't remember now. But basically, I'm doing this kind of raffle thing where I'm raffling off pieces of my boxing memorabilia collection. The item this week that I'm getting rid of is a framed Ricky Hatton hand signed photo with a certificate of authenticity. It's got a hanging wire on the back of the frame for easy display on the wall. It's £3 per entry, and I don't know if you're listening to this, you know how it works. If you don't, just send us a message on social media and we'll explain it. But basically, it's a football card. There's 20 teams on the card. Then there's like a scratch card piece. You scratch that bit off and it will reveal the winning team. Each team is just £3 for this. So yeah, there's 20 teams. If you buy one square, then you've got a 1 in 20 chance. You buy two squares, you've got a 1 in 10 chance. You buy four squares, you've got a 1 in 5 chance, so on, so on. The more squares you get, obviously, the bigger chance you have to win the prize. And we just have just four teams left. Tottenham, Blackburn, Chelsea and Manchester City. 16 of them have sold, just four left on that. I think that's about everything, though. Oh, yeah, one piece of news as well. Just a few fights on the undercard of the Tyson Fury-Francis Ngannou show. We're going to see Fabio Woodley get in there with David Adelaide. We're going to see Joseph Parker get in there with Simon Keane. We're going to see Arslan Bekmambetov get in there with Agron Smakichi. And also, no opponent just yet for him, but we're going to see Moses Itama on that card also. So all the big heavyweights go in there to Saudi Arabia, Riyadh. And yeah, the date again, if you didn't know, 28th of September. That'd be today, 28th of October. But yeah, that's everything from myself. Like I said, thank you all for tuning in once again. Special thank you this week. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.